the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Welcome to the final talk in our series Greater Part 2. For the last 8 weeks, we've been exploring chapters 6 through to 13 of the book of Hebrews. And tonight, I'll be exploring chapter 13 with you. Just over a week ago, the Judd household celebrated our eldest daughter Maddie's 21st birthday. As her birthday approached, I have to confess I went and looked back over the family photos, and she certainly has changed. She's changed physically, emotionally, spiritually, and intellectually. Now, change often takes place gradually over time, so only by looking back to the past do we really notice it. However, life seems to have changed radically in the year since Maddie's last birthday. In the last 12 months, we've had opportunities in church to reflect on the rise of the Me Too, Black Lives Matter, and the climate emergency movements. And now, of course, we have added COVID-19 to events which are changing our lives. Particularly due to COVID, Maddie's birthday celebrations were a little different this year. She lives in a house with five other students, so we weren't allowed to go there with a birthday cake. My parents in their early 80s are being very careful who they spend time with, and so they didn't travel to see her. And it was also a little touch and go whether Maddie's sister Emily, who is studying only an hour away, would be able to get there, since she is recovering from having had COVID already. Although change is a natural part of life, people react very differently to it, and rapid change magnifies our reactions. Change can disrupt the normal patterns and rhythms of the life we live. Change often causes some things to stop and new things to start. Change can have both negative and positive consequences. Change can arouse fear in some and excitement in others. Change can be accompanied by a sense of loss at what is left behind. But equally, it can be accompanied by a sense of anticipation. So, in particular, I wonder, what impact have the changes surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic had on your life since January? If you're a follower of Jesus, how has your walk with Jesus changed over that time? I wonder, do you feel closer or further away from God than in 2019? What have you stopped doing and what have you started? I know that people have found the changes difficult at times. Difficult emotionally, difficult spiritually, difficult financially, and of course, difficult physically for those who've actually caught it. COVID has impacted us all in different ways and to different extents. I think it's really helpful that we've had the opportunity to journey through the book of Hebrews at this time. Remember, Hebrews is one long sermon written to a Jewish Christian community reacting to significant change in their individual and collective lives. In the words of Thomas Long, this Jewish Christian community is exhausted, tired of serving the world, tired of being peculiar and whispered about, tired of the spiritual struggle, and they're losing confidence. The people they lived amongst were becoming more and more hostile towards them. In reactions, it seems that members of this community were finding refuge from the struggle of living a faithful Christian life during a time of political and religious disruption by returning to their Jewish roots, hiding in the synagogue, using their Jewish ethnicity to avoid discrimination, persecution, and distrust that was building against the Christian community. This sermon to the Hebrews is all about restoring their confidence in their Christian identity, confidence in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. It reminds them of why they became followers of Jesus in the first place. Hebrews reminds them what Christianity has to offer them that it could not find elsewhere. Hebrews encourages them to look to the future hope they have and not to the past. So I hope the book of Hebrews may give us a fresh confidence as well as we all navigate the new normal around us. Last week, we reached the crescendo of the sermon. Hebrews builds and builds through cycles of teaching and application until we reach Hebrews 12, verses 18 through to 29. Here, the people of God are encouraged to continue their journey to Mount Zion and encounter the living God. Listen to Hebrews 12, 22-24. But you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. This sermon is not designed to make people feel bad and failures, not to remind them of their mistakes. Hebrews as a sermon is there to give them a vision, to give them hope, to encourage them, to build them up, to help them persevere, to sustain them on their pilgrimage towards Mount Zion. They are reminded, Hebrews reminds them that they have access to a kingdom that cannot be shaken in verse 28. And the reason they can know they have a home in the city of God is because Jesus has established a new covenant with God through his shed blood. Wow, this is inspiring preaching. So why doesn't the sermon stop there at Hebrews 12 verse 29? Why have chapter 13 at all? Why not jump straight to the benediction in Hebrews 13 verse 20 and 21? Well, the author of Hebrews does what many modern preachers do when speaking. Preachers often start by telling you what their message is going to be about in their introduction, and then go on and tell you their message, laying out their arguments and illustrations. And finally, they then sum up their message in the conclusion and explain how to apply it to your life. And in the ancient world of rabbinic teaching and of Greek rhetoric, they followed a similar pattern. They started with an exordium designed to draw people in, giving people a glimpse of what lies ahead. And we see that in chapter 1, verses 1-4. Probatio, one long unfolding act of persuasion. And that runs from chapter 1, verse 5, all the way through to 12, verse 17. Peroration, the great climax of the pilgrimage of faith, worshipping God on Mount Zion. We've got that, chapter 12. Verses 18 through to 29. And then very often there was a final parenthesis, a summary and application. And this is what happens in chapter 13, verses 1 through to 19. Before the epistolary, the benediction and the letter aspects. Just signing off at the end of chapter 13, verses 20 through to 25. So tonight, as we explore chapter 13, we're reflecting particularly on how to live the Christian life in a changing world. Well, verses 1 to 8 reveal what a true life of pilgrimage should look like, whatever your circumstances. Having painted an amazing scene on Mount Zion in chapter 12, here in chapter 13, the preacher pulls together the themes, examples, and exhortations found throughout Hebrews 1 to 12 into five principles of Christian living, which he calls his audience to follow. They're five responses to the outpouring of God's love for them in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. The five principles are love, trust, worship, remember, and Jesus. Like all principles, these five are timeless. They can be applied in all different contexts, historical settings, and cultures. So tonight, let us reflect on these principles and consider how they may give shape to our lives in the changing COVID-shaped world we presently experience. Now, verses 1 to 4 are a manifesto of love. The distinctive feature of Christian behaviour is to be that of love, we're told. When people spend time with you, with me, what impressions do we leave with them? Hopefully, not a community who thinks that they are superior, not a community who are judgmental, but a community who loves others. These verses remind us that in all our relationships, love must be our controlling attitude. In our relationships between fellow believers, brothers and sisters within the local community of faith and wider afield, a mutual commitment to the well-being of each other explained and told in verse 1. In our relationships with strangers, Christian love should be outward looking. Hospitality is a strong theme throughout the New Testament writings, and it involves giving and also being willing to receive from others. It's a two-way relationship with strangers. In our relationships with those who are suffering, in the first century, there was huge social shame on visiting and caring for those in prison. Christians were ridiculed by ancient writers for caring for prisoners. Now, are we willing to identify with those which society rejects, to stand with the vulnerable, to value people how God values them, and not as objects to be used and abused? And verse 4 tells us that in our relationships within families, Christians are called to faithfulness within marriage. In the Gentile first century world, it was common for husbands to have multiple lovers alongside marriage. But Christian love calls for faithfulness, commitment, exclusivity. Now, the love of these four examples is a sacrificial love, a loving unconditionally, giving without expecting anything in return. It's a love that will inconvenience us, a love which may open us up to ridicule and judgment. It's probably going to be a love that's going to be misunderstood. It's a love that's not simply an emotional response, but involves reason. Love has to calculate how to improve the well-being of others. It's a love based on God's values. So what does loving look like for you in this new normal? What new ways, I wonder, to love have you embraced this year as we've had to leave some of our old ways behind? May we all love generously in ways appropriate to our own life experience as we make our pilgrimage to Mount Zion. In verse 5, the preacher reminds his audience where the people of God should put their trust. Where should they place their security? He sets up a contrast between the love of God and the love of money. This verse reminds us all that if we set money as our goal in life, then we will never be satisfied. Your life becomes one of continually seeking more and more. The love of money leads to restlessness. However, the love of God should bring contentment. Jesus spoke time and again about the dangers of loving money. The short-term gains of worshipping money versus the long-term consequences. Now, we live at a time of increasing financial uncertainty for people, where jobs are much more flexible, where we're not sure what's going to happen with different lockdowns and different levels. It's certainly a time when people could be very worried and focus on money, and that's very natural. So I'm really encouraged by the support which has been offered by some members of the church to others who are struggling financially. And I'd advise anybody who is facing huge financial pressures at the moment to get in touch with the church office or the church leaders, because we have money set aside to support you through this short time blip in this new normal. Now, I also love volunteering at Exeter Food Bank, as it shows practical love to the people in Exeter. And there are plenty of other Christian charities locally, national or international, through which we can love friends and strangers alike. As we live out our church strapline, telling the story and living the life, I think it's important that we must emphasise love in everything we do and reflect on it daily. May I encourage you also to be open to both giving and receiving from each other during this difficult financial period. Allowing people to serve you can make you feel uncomfortable, because we've been brought up to think that we're independent beings and we're failures if we can't do it for ourselves. But the Bible's clear. We're part of a greater community. We're brothers and sisters, and we're here to support each other through the ups and downs of life. Now, verse 6 goes on to remind Christians, to remind you and me, to remember the big picture from chapter 12. The people of God know what the future holds. Our security, both now and in the future, comes through Jesus, since he's the mediator of the new covenant. Therefore, we are called to live our lives accepting that God is more important than those who can only destroy the body. If God is for me, who can be against me? Yes, it's easy to say and not always easy to live out. And this is what the Hebrew Christians were struggling with. Putting God at the centre of our lives is showing the worth we place on being a child of God. Because Christian living is a life of worship, of giving worth to God. But we, of course, call it worship rather than worship. Everything we do reflects the quality of our relationship with God. So how has your worship been impacted by the change to the new normal? Over the last couple of weeks in the service, people have shared how they've adapted to the COVID change in our world. So may I encourage you to try new things, new approaches, new methods. Being prevented from doing what we're used to does not always have to be negative. It may free up time and opportunity for a fresh expression of worship, for a creative response. And may we all be honest in our sharing of both the difficulty in worshipping, as we have in the past, but also the new ways of worshipping we have experienced and embraced. And may that be an encouragement to other people to step outside perhaps of their comfort zone. Verse 7 is probably referring to past church leaders no longer alive. Those who first brought the good news of Jesus to the city. Those who led members of the Hebrew church to faith in Jesus as God's Messiah, his anointed one. Without those leaders' willingness to love their neighbours, to worship and trust God with their lives, the Hebrew Christians would perhaps never have come to faith. So here, Christians are reminded to remember the past and Christians who have walked the road of discipleship before them. To remember their own spiritual experiences as well. If we're not sure what God is up to in the world today, if we do not feel close to God at the moment, then I think verse 7 encourages us to remember God's faithfulness to us in the past. To draw strength from our memories of when God met with us, individually or as a community, down through the years. Last week, Adrian encouraged us to think about people who have been examples to us in our own walk of faith. So why not spend some time this week remembering and even writing down times when you've experienced specific times of God's faithfulness to you? Or again, as Adrian encouraged, those people who have encouraged us by their own example, let us remember in order to hold on to the faith that we have as we look to the future. In verse 8, we find both a summary and application of the entire message of Hebrews. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. The preacher's message is that no matter what life throws up, look to Jesus. Because in a world of change, only Jesus remains the same. Jesus is the one person in life that I can guarantee you can trust. Jesus is the one person who will never let you down. Jesus is the one person who makes sense of the past, the present, and future experiences we're living through. Life can only truly make sense through the lens of Jesus. Now, one of my favourite contemporary worship songs is Cornerstone, which adapted the words from the hymn, My Hope is Built on Nothing Less. Now, the original hymn has a great chorus, which unfortunately Cornerstone sadly changes. The original says this, On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. The original Hebrew Christian audience of this sermon had lost sight of what being a disciple of Jesus meant. They'd become distracted by the difficulties of life. Perhaps they'd even uttered those well-known words children can say to a parent, If you love me, then you would... It seems to me that the Hebrew Christians' expectations of what the Christian life should look like had been distorted or become confused or modified, or even simply replaced by strange teaching. They seem to have assumed that God's love would free them from pain, suffering, trials and temptations. They appear to have lost hope, lost sight, lost trust in the good news of Jesus, and wandered off the path to Mount Zion. Well, if you ever get lost, there are a number of ways in which you can react to the situation. So I'm not sure if these Hebrew Christians chose in panic or deliberately made the decision to find security in what they already knew, the past. But Hebrews 12, verses 18 to 29 suggests that some of that little Christian community were happily walking along the path to Mount Sinai rather than persevering and either staying on, or if realizing they have wandered off, get back onto the path to Mount Zion. Now, interestingly, a faithful Jew could probably agree with Hebrews chapter 13, verses 1 through to 7, and all the quotes that are there from the Old Testament. But verse 8 is a step too far for an Orthodox Jew. And this is the key point that the preacher is making in the book of Hebrews. He's reminding the people that Jesus has become the new centre of faith, which the Old Testament points to. I wonder, if we pause now and each of us took time to carry out a spiritual MOT on these five principles, what would our report be like? Whenever I take my car to the garage for an MOT or service, it always comes back with a health checkup. I receive a list of checks that have been colour-coded, green, amber and red. So I wonder if we pause now and each took the time to reflect on these five principles of Christian discipleship, what colours would come back for each? I know personally I would not have green across them all, but I don't think I'd either have red either. I'm certainly a work in progress. And I think it's normal that when we come up against big life changes, we have to adjust how we live our lives as Christians. Yes, the principles stay the same, but what they look like, how we live them out day to day, may look different. And just as the book of Hebrews encouraged the Hebrew Christians to keep on the pilgrimage to Mount Zion, the heavenly Jerusalem, so that at the final judgment they could enter the very presence of God, it encourages us also to keep going. And verse 8 of Hebrews 13 should be an encouragement to persevere, because it reminds us that we don't walk alone. That in this unpredictable world, Jesus is a constant. And yes, verse 1 reminds us that our fellow Christians are there as a fellow constant as well. Well, we've got as far as verse 8 and spent lots of time here. Now, I wonder if you're thinking we still have a long journey ahead of us with 17 verses to go. Well, don't panic, because we're not going to cover them tonight. Not only is verse 8 the key verse in Hebrews 13, it also acts as a hinge. The preacher is employing another common speaking technique in the ancient world. Verses 11 through to 19 and beyond take up and explore the principles which we have already explored in verses 1 to 8. Each principle can be found in the remaining verses. There are further examples and applications. Some verses go into more depth. Some give further examples. Some principles are easier to find, but they're all there. So my encouragement to you is this week, spend time rummaging through verses 9 through to 19 and finding those links. This sermon to Hebrew Christians has always been one of my favourite books in the Bible, since it is such a summary and reminder of the love of God and the hope we have in Jesus. Whilst our life circumstances are very different to the original congregation who first heard Hebrews read to them, we all experience changes in life, which can be a challenge to our faith and the walk with Jesus that we're on. So let me leave you tonight with a question for reflection. How has this sermon to Hebrew Christians given you a fresh vision of the hope you have in Christ and encouraged you to persevere on your pilgrimage to Mount Zion as we navigate the new normal? My prayer for all of us is that the book of Hebrews, this sermon to Hebrew Christians, will remind us why we became followers of Jesus in the first place, will remind us to look to the future hope we have in Christ, and will remind us that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever, that he that is in us is greater than he that is in the world. Amen.